Hello and welcome to the Screencast. I'm Dan.
And I'm Olga, and today we're discussing season one, episode four of Scream Queens entitled Haunted House.
Very haunted.
Very haunted.
So the beginning of the Halloween epic spectacular that they're doing here. Next week's also Halloweeny.
Isn't it
Yeah.
three?
I think it's three. I'm pretty sure it's three parts, yeah. So
That's some
that's
next level TV. Not
Yes.
just the two-parter, the three-parter, which, as I like to call, plot progression. It's just called having episodes.
Having
Having episodes. Showing a show. Like, that's.
So we are going to quickly just give you guys a spoiler warning. We're going to be getting to everything through episode four. So if you haven't seen episode four, skedaddle.
Yeah, or hear us talk about.
A show you don't know.
Or, well, that's fine. I was just gonna say, hear us talk about all the twists and turns.
That nobody saw coming, unless you did.
Yeah.
I just want to also quickly say that we are recording at Olga's college in her dorm room. So if we're a little echoey or her roommates are going wacky,
Yeah,
that's why.
my dorm house, but in the room of my dorm house. So at least it's not like a multi-level dorm, like the dormy dorm, because then it would be impossible to record
Yeah, I mean,
here.
I've recorded with my friend Jesse like over Skype, and his room was near where like the door that everybody went in and out of the dorm, and like, every once in a while you just
Oof.
hear people smacking through the door and
Yeah,
like
that
fun
sounds terrible.
stuff.
But I'm right at the top of stairs, so anytime anyone goes to the kitchen, we're gonna hear it.
People want to eat, so.
Sorry about that. Yeah, people, we're recording after 10 o'clock. We're college students. We eat after 10 o'clock, so it's dinner time.
It's second dinner.
Second dinner.
All right, so general thoughts on Haunted House. What do you think of this episode?
So it had a lot of great moments in it. I really liked some of the stuff. Definite highlights. And I definitely started to really really like most of the characters. Like, I felt really
Throw a cat
connect.
too.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I felt really connected to them as people. For, still acknowledging their two dimensionality, but like, I really felt connected to the characters and like knew where they were coming from. But there was so much
There's
stuff.
a lot of stuff.
It was so over full with like different plot points, and I guess it worked. Like, they came together, but there was just some real like non sequitur scenes that kind of.
I felt kind of overwhelmed. I don't think this is as good as last week, but I still liked it. I think that there are good moments, but nothing to the level of the Coney fight or the Backstreet Boy fight for me. And there are big moments that I did enjoy, but they weren't quite that level. I agree with you. I like a lot of these characters. Chad continues to be great. I like Hester more now. I think that Grace was a little bit better than last week. So yeah, I liked it. I just it felt like a lot of big moment, a lot of big elements coming together. Some of them seem kind of out of place or just too much at once. Or and then we'll talk a little bit about some of the satirical things and how some of them worked, some of them like half worked, like things like that. But like we did last week, I'm gonna start off with a few of the cinematic techniques that they've employed this week. So there's gonna be some overlap from last week as well. The first thing I wrote is just the high angle that they used when Denise is talking to Shondell. She looks up and we have this angle from above of her talking to her.
Shondell up in the great Best Buy parking lot in the sky. Like, not just the Best Buy in the sky, the Best Buy parking lot in the sky.
Her fallen comrade. So that was fun. The continued use of the crash zooms from last week, the slow motion, especially in the fight scene. We have this, a lot of just like craziness in the fight scene there.
The cafeteria fight scene.
Yeah. And the crash zoom, specifically the biggest crash zoom that I remember is when Chanel sees that Zayday is going to run for president. It just goes straight into her, and then the slow motion of the pumpkin falling. We also had some whip pans, which are just like super rapid fire pans. when Chanel, after the whole knife scene where she's sharpening the knives, Chanel's looking from like Chanel to Chanel and it whips back and forth. So that was kind of fun. One of the kookier things I think was the sort of extreme close-up when Chad and Hester were talking in the graveyard, and it super closes up on both of them individually as they talk to each other, and they're kind of just like looking at the camera almost, and it's like, whoa, there's a lot of Chad going on here.
Yeah, that was the I'd say that this episode in terms of cinematic style was like more exaggerated version of last week's episode. Like we saw some of this stuff or almost all of this stuff last week, and it would happen a little bit, like one or two times, but here it was like every scene almost had something there. So I kind of like that some of this potentially more unorthodox mix of like filming styles, they kind of let it seep into the show, and now I think it's just something we're gonna see every week.
Yeah,
And I look
definitely.
forward to that, because that's something that makes it the show not just interesting to listen to, like it makes me not want to get distracted because I don't want to miss some of the atmosphere that this
I
supplies.
agree. And also just, I mean, they didn't write down as much of the sound stuff, but again, really great sound work going on in this episode. So I also liked the scene with Grace and West talking about her parentage or whatever, is a little bit more shaky. It's small movements. If you're not looking for it, you might not even really get it, but it's a little bit of that sort of handheld nature and sort of panning with her and bobbing with the drama. Just show that things are a little off kilter. I also, it's one of the biggest things that I'm sure everybody really was like, whoa, is the big cell phone scene where she's texting or Grace is texting with Pete, and it shows the text like above the phone, and it has this big, I don't even know
It
what I.
was like diagonally, like based on the angle of how they were holding their phones, it was stemming off of the top of their phones. And because we started on the other side of Grace, looking at her looking down at her phone, we saw the text bubble
Pop up.
backwards. And then we zoomed over, not zoomed, but like we moved over to
It
be
was
next to
like
her.
a rotating, I forget what you call this move where you sort of rotate around, you revolve around the character, and so then it transitions the turning into Pete and seeing his perspective of it. This is something they used a lot actually on Glee, where they would go around the singers like that as they were singing. They actually went a very kind of overboard with that in Glee, but they're using it nicely here. I also liked, I think it was very nice, as opposed to the crash zooms, they had a zoom out here when after Hester and Chad saw all the dead bodies in the haunted house, they go back to that cafe and you see a shot that's like on Hester, and it sort of pulls out to both of them at the cafe. So it's sort of like, we don't even know where we. It's like you're kind of in her headspace, and you pull out, and you're like, "Where? Like, what even happened here?"
And it's funny because they're in a fucking Starbucks,
Yeah, we are explicit now, by
Oh yeah,
the
sorry, that's all me, guys.
and one of our rather feisty listeners.
Oh, correct.
Also, obviously, another big one everybody's going to talk about is the freeze frame and then sort of making everything red when the Red Devil captures Zayday. That was kind of kooky. Reminds me of something like Tarantino-y or a little bit.
Yeah, that was honestly, that was something that I wasn't expecting. Like that, they didn't do anything like that before. But another thing
Well,
is,
actually, can I quickly correct you on that?
yeah.
That it sort of reminds me of when they were introducing all the pledges, and they would freeze frame on the different pledges and give them like a name, like a title thing. Sort of
Oh,
similar
okay.
there, yeah.
Yeah, but it was also tilted and colored. I mean, I guess, but it was kind of like pushing it
Yeah, it
further.
was even further, yeah.
Another thing that we didn't see before is after the zoom in on the Chanel, after when the three Chanels are together in the closet badge. That might be another reason we got explicit. That they like zoom into Chanel number one and then they blur.
I did
And
not know what was up with
but
that.
that was like, I don't, you thought it might have been a mistake, but I don't think it was a mistake. But it was a split second. But it was weird.
Yeah, so this is the end of that scene. If you guys want to go and check that out, it was the end of the scene with the three Chanels and the closet bag.
I wanna say that this episode was directed by Bradley Bucher, and he did direct episodes of Glee. but he also helped develop American Horror Story.
Ah, okay.
And he was an EP on the show, and he directed some episodes for that as well.
Okay.
And I definitely see how... I should be expecting this more, I guess, because they, you know, Murphy and Falchuk, they tend to work with the same people over and over again. So I really shouldn't be surprised that they're employing American Horror Story people, but this definitely felt more stylistically like episodes from that show.
Do you think we'll get, like, maybe not this season, but do you think, like, later seasons we might get, like, Jessica Lange or Evan Peters or some sort of guest star or... I could see, like, a one episode thing.
Jessica Lange's, like, basically retired now. Yeah, like, or at least she says she is. We'll see.
Okay.
But it would be cool if we got some...
Or who's people. That girl? The girl was in the first season.
Taissa Farmiga. Yeah. Farmiga.
I could see her popping up.
Yeah. Did you know this episode was actually... had, like, less viewers than any of their previous episodes?
Oh, really?
Yeah. It scored under 3.
Oh.
3 million people.
So people did not like episode 3. That's weird.
Yeah, it's been steadily decreasing.
Well, the thing is, so I'm not that surprised that it's decreased from the pilot, but it also, they have a lot more competition. Like, even I was like, oh, am I going to watch Scream Queens now, or am I going to watch iZombie, or am I going to watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good things on at that time slot.
Yeah.
And so.
And I never watch it live because I watch it on demand the next day.
So, okay, we're going to get into, we're not going character-wise this week, but we're also not going scene-by-scene, as some people might want. We're going by plot line. So basically, I sort of separated things out into chunks. It's mostly semi-chronological, but we're starting with Chanel-Oween, which is the opening section. Which, if you don't know, is a satire slash parody of Swiftmas, which is a Taylor Swift thing. I didn't even know about this beforehand. How much did you know about this?
I mean, I've heard of it, and I remember it being a viral video. So it was one of those things that I was, like, exposed to through secondary media of, like, people on Twitter, on my newsfeed talking about it.
Mm.
Or, like, those entertainment sites that I go to talking about it, but I never actually watched the video.
Yeah.
And... I am fine with that. Like, that's nothing against Taylor Swift, like her music, but I'm not about to dedicate more time to.
I saw, like, when I was reading a review of this, I saw, like, a link to the original video.
Mm-hmm.
I watched, like, the first minute. I did not get through the full video.
And I begged you not to make me watch it.
But I do know enough to know that the opening, you know, text on the screen and that whole sound effect, that was all a direct grabbing from the original video.
Mm-hmm.
And so very similar stuff here. What do you think about this?
I think it's kind of ballsy of this show to, like, make fun of people who are probably, like, considering the demographic overlap between Taylor Swift fans and the people watching this show, it's probably, like, fairly high.
Yeah.
So to kind of go after, or at least not go after, but I could
poke fun at
Taylor Swift and, like, her fans.
A little bit more hardcore than just poke fun at, but
right.
Well, the thing is, so I am wondering do we have any, like, hardcore Taylor Swift fans out there listening to us that might have been, like, annoyed by this or whatever. I mean, I read an article about, like, just, like, glanced at it, where they're like, this is what grid satire is Pope taking aim at someone who most people see as, like, you can't go there, you know, like, this person's perfect, whatever.
Yeah.
And showing that, they're not awful people, but there's a little bit more to think about here as far as, especially the whole background song of It's All About You, and sort of, I'm trying to remember exactly, the Chanel had a line about, like, make sure you share this on social media, because this is all about, you know, me making myself look good.
That was the line that really kind of made me go, like, oh.
Yeah.
Make me look good in front of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, you think it's about you, but it's about me. And I know a lot of people make a big deal about how, like, Taylor Swift really seems to care about her fans. And I'm not saying that's untrue.
Mm.
And I'm not saying that the other side is also untrue, you know, like...
Yeah. Well, it's a little bit of... I do... Not knowing that much about the situation...
Yeah.
I feel like he's in a tough spot, in a way. You do want to give back to people, and even if she didn't make a big video out of it, if she was doing this, this would have gotten a lot of attention anyway.
Yeah.
And it's just like when any of the Marvel people or whatever go and do something nice for charity, or they, or they dress up and they go to the hospital or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, that's going to be picked up, and it's going to make them look really good. Mm-hmm. Does that take away from the fact that they're doing something nice? I don't really necessarily think so. I do think there might be a sort of inflated sense of oneself there, but I don't really blame her. She's a phenomenon, you know, like...
Yeah.
Does it bother you at all that it doesn't make any sense that Chanel would have a bunch of followers and people? I mean, like, maybe some Instagram followers, but, like, there's no even real reason just because she's the head of the... I mean, I did like the, it affects tens of people.
Yeah.
Like, that was really funny.
I mean, she only has like 800 or like 7 something.
Okay.
So, I mean, I would say that's not an unreasonable amount to have. I could see how she could get that many, but that's not an insane amount of people.
No, I don't disagree.
Yeah.
I just think that it's one thing to have those people, it's another thing to have those people, like, film themselves having reactions to your silly presence or whatever. But, I mean, obviously this is to be over the top and whatever.
And they're poking fun at her for thinking, like, look at my inflated sense of self-importance.
Yeah.
And it's literally, like, not that many people.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
She did send people actual dead body parts.
Actual dead body parts?
I mean, she was like, yeah, I took that head from an optometry or ophthalmology student who owed me a favor or some line like that. So
it's funny because I didn't think of, I mean, I guess we got introduced to this character like planning a really over-the-top crazy prank with Miss Bean, but I didn't really think of her until this episode as being super macabre, because especially between that and we'll get to the knife thing later, like, that's a lot of, she's gotten kind of dark and crazy. But,
and yet, she still won't let Chad have sex with her. She's a corpse.
What a silly girl.
Come on.
Come on, girls. Just pretend Chanel. You're a corpse.
That's exactly what a man wants of them. Every man, especially Chad.
Alright, shall we move on to Zayday versus Chanel for the presidency? It's my next bullet point.
Yeah, I think that's a good one.
So we start off with Earl Grey going to Zayday and being like, we are the future of the Greek system. Without people like us, like, it's gonna fall to hell or whatever.
It's gonna fall apart. Like, basically, the current system can't sustain itself.
Yeah.
And, you know, they brought up some good examples from real life.
Yeah.
Like, because now whenever you hear about the Greek system in media...
Yeah. Though I don't know how having people of color as the president stops the alcohol poisoning part of it, but...
Right. Like, anyone could be irresponsible around alcohol.
But but at least it will get some positive attention, I guess, is the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, I like this them sort of teaming up to try to change the order here. And Zayday getting a lot more to do this week than usual.
Yeah. I mean, them teaming up makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Because if you're gonna have, like, the token, like, black person in either scenario, and then, but they're aware that they're, like, the token black person, then...
You're talking as far as in the world.
In their world, not in real life. Yeah. Like, it makes sense as a storyline, I guess.
Yeah, I can see
it. I like it. I like them pointing out their own...
Yeah.
Like, unique scenario.
Also, giving Zayday more than just hanging out as Grace's sidekick, I think it's a nice thing.
Or a suspect.
Yeah.
We'll get back to that.
So then we get, I liked the scene as, I have under this is also the scene with the pumpkins, where they're at the place where Mrs. Bean died.
AKA the kitchen.
Yes.
It's like, this is where Mrs. Bean died. It's like, it's also your frickin' kitchen. Like, you're in a house, you're gonna go to the kitchen. I go to my kitchen. Again, getting back to my kitchen.
So basically, Olga's saying, I don't care who's died in my kitchen, I want my food.
I'll be in my kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're exquisitely carved pumpkins. Yes. Except Grace is just like, I made a jack-o'-lantern. And I was like, Yes, you did. Good job. You did what anyone can do.
Yes.
Like a real person can do.
I liked the Charles Manson thing.
That's a good nod to last week, even though they didn't revisit that.
Yeah, so she got like pretty, like in a lot of ways, toned down and became more of a side person again this week, but I like that they brought that little glimmer back.
Yeah.
I also, so we had the Florida, the hurricane hitting Florida thing from Jessica. That was fun.
Jennifer?
Yeah, Jennifer, not Jessica.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and then so this is the scene where she finds out that Zayday is going to be running for president, and I like the sort of the reaction to this where we get to the next the scene where Chanel is sharpening the knives.
Oh, loved that.
Yes, really funny. I mean, I do think this is one of Emma Roberts' better episodes. I think that she had a really fun performance this week, and I actually did enjoy watching her this week. I don't necessarily like love every single thing that happened, but I think that watching her was fun.
Mm-hmm. She was still Chanel. Like, yeah. She still said things that were sharp and, like, so bitchy. The spectrum line about Jennifer and, like, a few other things. But it just continued being her. Mm. But, like, this is exactly it. They're fleshing her out.
Yeah.
But retaining that personality.
On the flip side, I'm a little confused about how I'm supposed to view the Chanels as a group.
Mm-hmm.
Because, so we started the show and they seemed like they were kind of her minions or whatever. And then last week, it seemed like they kind of hated her.
Oh, yeah.
Or at minimum didn't respect her anymore. And they had slept with her boyfriend and that they were like, I don't care about your drama. And then this week they seemed to be buddies again.
Oh, yeah. I totally forgot that last week we started with Chanel number 5 saying she was done with Chanel number 1.
Yeah.
Being like, whatever you do, I'm off getting Eiffel Towered by twins.
And didn't Chanel number 5 also say maybe there's time for a different president after the Hester thing happened?
Yeah.
And then she just accepted Hester as one of the Chanels in this episode.
Yeah.
It seems weird. Also, I mean, I guess the only thing I could think of if I'm like working to try to help them out and with their continuity is that they're all supposed to be racist, so they would rally against Zayday. But that didn't really come up. Like, if that had come up, then I would get it more. But without them actually explicitly saying that, it does feel like, why am I have to figure this out? You guys should be explaining why the characters are not making any sense. I haven't rewatched the 2-hour premiere basically since it came out. I kind of want to rewatch and see how the Chanel 5 and Earmuff Chanel were acting in those episodes, because it does seem like since then they've been kind of all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, I would say they weren't really, like, they were, like, directly her minions. Yeah,
and I can't remember which ones were the more racist, like, were they both equally racist, or was it, like, 5 was more racist?
I would say 5, just because she had more to say than number 3?
Yeah.
Is that who she was?
I'm just calling her, let's just call them Abigail, Reslin, and Earmuff.
Earmuff, yeah, you're right. I don't remember, but I completely didn't
remember.
Yeah. You know what this makes me think? Potentially, there was a different episode, like, they were writing to structure it differently, but then they were like, oh, it's gonna be October when we're airing.
Yeah.
We should do Halloween episodes. But, like, maybe if it had been a two-parter, it would have made more sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seems
like there's there's a step in between there where things are missing, sort of. Or just that, like, last week was kind of the off week and that maybe this is the status quo. I don't know. But
I mean, I guess, like, I don't know. It's like if they get one character or some characters right in terms of pacing and development, they drop the ball on something else.
Yeah. And I'm not even saying that I didn't necessarily like their scene. Like, I thought they were fun. It just felt odd to me given what happened last week, where it seemed like they didn't care about her at all.
Yeah.
And so
I loved her swinging around the knives and them being like, "Oh, Chanel."
Yes.
Like, that was great. Funny. And then the whooshing noise and the knives.
Yeah. No, that was really funny.
And the sharpener.
And just so crazy and surrealist. And just, like, that version of her I enjoy watching because it's so crazy.
Yeah. Also, she's like, every kitchen should have sharp knives. Yeah. I'm like, did you even know you had a kitchen before, Mrs. Bean? Like, What? Like, you don't take me for the type that cares about her kitchen implements.
All right, shall we switch
gears completely? Yeah, we should move on from this, because...
Yeah, we're going to switch gears completely and talk about the whole Mandy storyline, starting with Pete and Grace coming in with their How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days outfits.
That was so random.
It felt really strange.
That's another thing that makes me think there was something in between, actually.
They looked adorable, but that's about all that I get from, like...
Like, I'm surprised we didn't get a road trip scene or something where they're talking to each other.
Well, except that it does transition from end of last week was them like getting into the car, her, you know, lying to her dad, and then...
Right.
So then we get Pete being Matthew McConaughey. What do you think of that?
That was really weird.
I thought it was kind of funny.
I mean, I liked it. Yeah. I thought it was topical.
Yeah, definitely.
And I love the, like, what the hell look that Grace gives him, like, stop.
Yeah.
Like, clearly this woman doesn't know you're doing McConaughey.
Well, I think the thing is he just said she doesn't know most pop culture things.
Oh.
But I think he was trying to, like, use the technique to confuse her and make her fall to his charm or something. So I thought it was kind of funny.
It was funny, but it was just, like...
Strange.
Pete, what? Like, it kind of actually reminded me a bit of Noah from... Scream. In that he's all of a sudden popping into a reference and fully embracing it. Yeah. So I liked it.
Yeah.
It was clever.
I'm trying to figure out who Grace reminded me of with that, like, hairstyle and outfit. Maybe Anna Paquin or something, or I don't know. She...
I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
It didn't ring as Kate Hudson to me, but anyway.
Shall we?
So they're talking to Mandy, who's one of the former Kappa Tau sisters.
Who was there in the 90s when the baby died.
When
the mom died.
Yeah, for the birth and cover-up of the death of a pledge.
Yeah, so do you want to get into that flashback now, or do you want to see that before we get to Dean Muggs later?
Let's save that.
Okay, so the big reveal here is that she says that it was a girl baby. And so then we get, like, a whoosh zoom in on Grace, where she's like, oh my god, I'm out of baby, boop-a-doop.
It couldn't be Mr. Redwell.
So we'll get back to that, because I have a whole section specifically about Grace versus Wes, but I do want to talk about Mandy's death scene, which is, in a lot of ways, one of the more classical horror scenes that we've had in this show.
Only classic horror scene we've had on the show.
Yeah, right? Like, I'm trying to think, like... Maybe, I mean, the one with Gigi wasn't totally crazy, but it was, especially with the setup here of this person's all alone at home, and there's noises outside, and what's going on, and I have a baseball bat.
And they're following her.
Yeah.
Like, she moves over here, she moves over there, and the noises are going
to continue. And here's the thing, I thought that even though in some ways it rings me as strange to have a more classical one at this point in the show, I did think that they did it well. I thought that the suspense building and the sound design and the lighting and everything worked really well to build that tension. I did think that the payoff was surprisingly lacking with her seeing him behind her and walking backwards into him, and then basically just cuts away as he picks up his knife.
I mean, it surprised me at first where I was like, why'd she do that? But it makes sense. Like, you're shocked at what you see. You take a step back. And he just so happened to be behind her. I was actually kind of glad. Because, honestly, if each kill is an upgrade... Or not upgrade.
Another crazy...
Yeah, just another crazy thing. Or, like, builds on the previous one.
Yeah.
Then that becomes the norm. And you're not surprised by it anymore. I'd rather have these, like, more normal things so that... Like, the stuff that happened at the end of the episode in the haunted house. Not even
crazy,
the end of the episode, in the middle of the episode. That got to be the shocker. And that wasn't a death scene. That was a post-death scene.
At the same time, I kind of wish... You don't have to go super crazy. I kind of wish he at least, like, grabbed, maybe choked her from behind with, like, a rope or something. Like, just something a little different. Like, it doesn't have to be, like, over the top
That
would have
been even more... Like, that to me would have been even more generic horror.
It's just... I don't like seeing him just use this knife like as some sort of Scream character. You know, it doesn't seem fitting.
I mean, it's a slasher.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem like this guy's style. Whenever he just uses a knife, it feels odd to me.
Well, here's the thing. There are two killers.
Yeah, that's true.
And just because two of them had chainsaws last week. Doesn't mean that one.
Well, that's the other thing, because I'm wondering, is the chainsaw just, like, gone now? Like, was it just for that episode?
I really hope we see the chainsaw again. I want it to be knives and chainsaws with a few other things.
I want there to be knives and chainsaws.
I mean, I know. I sound like a total psychopath right now.
I do want to ask you, though. Mm-hmm. So now we're in episode 4. Right. And another just, like, totally... Someone who got introduced this episode died again. And so now we're, you know, basically since, what, the premiere, we haven't had someone who actually is in any way matters as the victim of the week. Like, I'm surprised that we haven't had at least Jennifer or Sam or... I thought Hester. I really thought Hester was going to die this episode.
Me too, actually. So I didn't want her to. I'm glad she didn't.
I am in between. Like, I mean, I like Hester, but I also am at that point now where I want somewhat of a major death to happen. It's because, and they do at least do a good job as far as, like, every episode has big moments, even if it doesn't have a big death. Like,
right.
I mean, obviously the haunted house thing is crazy and big, and I don't know that I need something bigger than that this week.
And Zayday, the cliffhanger on her.
So, yeah, the fact that he kidnapped Zayday is, I guess that's a big deal. It does feel like... I don't think we've had, in my opinion, a big death on the show. Because, like, Ariana Grande, we didn't know anything about her character. It was the first episode. And,
I mean, almost everyone, like, I would say, from what I read, expected her to go in the first episode, too. So.
And, like, so, like, the only big death was Boone, and Boone wasn't really dead. Also, I really want to see Boone again.
but I figured this would happen. Alright, so I guess to answer your question, it doesn't bother me because I think that the perspective we're supposed to be coming from is that the killers are toying with the Kappas. And, I mean, the killer tried to kill Gigi, and I'd say Gigi's, like, up there in terms of important characters. We didn't see her after the first scene in the sorority house.
She popped in for, like,
bear and the thing and the real cliffhanger. But the killer so they tried to kill her, but they failed.
Yeah.
I like that the killer is fallible.
So I guess my question is, if you're going to compare it to something, and I won't go into that specific spoilers about MTV Scream, but so that show had episodes where nobody died. But when they killed someone, it was usually, like, a pretty big someone, at least relatively, like, bigger than the people we've had die on Scream Queens.
Yes.
Do you think, as far as the, like, methods go, what do you think's working more? I don't really...
So, on Scream, I would say that I wasn't really missing people dying.
Yeah.
But that's because I was going into it not super familiar with the genre, so I didn't really have, like,
a lot of people were like, what the heck, what were the deaths in my slasher series?
Right. Yeah. But because I was so, like, unfamiliar with slashers and kind of the pacing on the number of murders that should occur, it didn't really bother me. I was like, oh, it just feels like I'm watching, like, a cheesy drama kind of thing, like a fun, cheesy drama.
Yeah.
But on this show, if there wasn't a death every week, I would feel, or at least... I mean,
or a big, crazy, violent moment.
Like last week, we didn't have a death.
Well, we had the dismemberment.
Right, but that wasn't a death. At least we don't think that was a death. They would have...
Oh, we had Coney.
Oh, yeah, Coney. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we did. Of course we had a death. All right, so, right. But that almost didn't feel like a death because it's, like, it's so cartoony that, like, he wasn't a person.
We never saw his face.
Yeah, but... So I feel like if there wasn't that in this show,
it would be a problem.
It would be a problem because
it's all about
the
spectacle.
Exactly. This show is the spectacle. This show is cheesy drama in a different way.
Yeah.
It is more comedic.
Yeah.
And I think, need, even if it's a minor character, I need to see it every episode here.
I think both methods work in different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way of summarizing what I was drawn out.
It made sense. All right. We're gonna get into Grace and Wes, and Grace sort of calling him out about, is she the baby? Is he the killer? All this stuff. Basically, all the stuff we've been talking about. How do you feel? Like, to me, this kind of ends the West theory.
No, I'm so disappointed.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, once again, the scene begins in Wes's class where he's showing another horror movie. Did we ever look up which horror movie that was?
Oh, we forgot. So it's about kids attacking. It looks sort of Exorcist-y, but I don't think it was The Exorcist.
I don't think it was, like, Children of the Corn. I feel like that was older than, like, what this was.
I apologize. We're outing ourselves in our lack of classic horror knowledge, so if you know, I'm sure someone out there will let us know.
Hey, I have fully advertised my lack of horror knowledge. If anyone should be disappointed,
it's me.
Yes.
Well, at the same time, it doesn't, unless I'm mistaken, it doesn't look like the kind of horror movie that I watch usually. I'm not a huge supernatural style fan, but yeah, definitely looks like a classic thing. Wes is a weirdo. He has this whole rant about being a child and how everybody's worst fear is their childhood self coming back to haunt them. And that is not a universal thing, in my opinion.
He's the worst professor. Like, I get it. You're not teaching your technical subject that you're trained in. But, like, come on, man.
He doesn't even get out of his seat.
He doesn't. Like, first of all, most of your students are sitting behind you, and let me tell you, every time my professors don't use a mic or a mic pack, we get mad because we can't hear them past the first two rows. So, Wes, whatever bullshit line you're giving in the last minute of class, if that's what your students are supposed to be taking notes on, no one can hear them. Worst teacher-professor review ever at the end of the semester. Anyway.
I do want to say, so I'm glad that they called out both these obvious theories early on, because I did not want it to be Grace is the kid, and I don't think it will be. I do think it's Grace is becoming, especially if Grace isn't the kid, Grace is becoming strangely extraneous in some ways. I don't know if she is the protagonist or not, and what's going on there. Like, if she isn't the kid, or isn't in some way personally connected, I'm like, is the reveal that she isn't the protagonist and you thought she was, but she is? Like, Chanel, once again, had way more to do with Grace.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad thing necessarily if Grace isn't the protagonist. It's just unclear to me. And I'm kind of confused.
Yeah. Zeta had as much to do this episode as Grace, I think.
Definitely.
I mean, a lot of their scenes were together, but they had, I think, almost as many outside of each other's presence scenes.
Yeah, definitely. And then both of them had goals, and both of them were active and went after them.
And interact with other characters.
Yeah.
I don't know. Would I be disappointed? I feel like I would be disappointed if they made her even less of a protagonist.
I think I would be too.
Because they like one of the first scenes in the show was her.
Yeah.
And I just feel like they walked away from her or like kept her at this minimal until like the finale, I'd feel like they'd be like going back on a promise in a way.
I mean, in some ways I think like, oh, this feels a little original and you're playing with the usual ideas of who the protagonist is or whatever. But at the same time, like, she's the one of the few people that I like actually like, as opposed to maybe just like Hester, I like watching her on screen, but like I'm not invested in Hester's life,
right?
And so
Hester is the Chad of girls,
as we'll get to more soon, but as specifically about this confrontation between Grace and her father, the bath salts thing I thought was really funny.
That's like such a dad thing to say.
Yes, very, very good. And sort of, you know, I believe him when he says, I saw you come out of your mother, that was a mistake.
Again, like, great. Great dad one-liner.
Are you happy with Grace overall in this episode, or are you on board with her?
I want more of her.
Yeah.
I want more funny scenes with her.
Yeah,
that's
agree.
Thing. She's just like, she's being too much of the whiny lead. Like, they don't give her enough humor.
Yeah, since Hell Week, I thought she was good. I liked that scene she had with Pete. And basically, since she stormed out from Pete and didn't get to third base, she's been in a bad mood.
The problem. You know how to solve the problem? All the way. Home run. And that'll reset. Anyway, have safe sex, kids.
So, next
week. I don't know what to say. I mean, actually, this applies to the next scene, what we're talking about next. Well, have safe sex, everybody.
Wait, actually, we skipped one point I wanted to say, which is...
this doesn't apply to Grace and her dad, please. Gross.
So, before we get into the safe sex, apparently, we wanted to throw in the similarities between the Grace and Wes scene and a scene in Scream that Brooke had with her dad, calling him out and basically being like, if you're the killer, I will disown you, and blah, blah, blah. And it was just...
disown you as a parent.
Yes.
Okay.
It was just a funny coincidence there, and just both scenes to me were a little goofy. I mean, I don't know what you can do differently, but just, like, if you think he could be the killer, calling them out in, like, a defiant teenager-y way is really silly to me.
Yeah, but who haven't they called out?
We'll get to that. Let's get back.
I know, but right. Still, like...
let's get into your sex thing. All right, this next section...
in a way, it is my sex thing, because we're about to go to Olga's ship of the week. Toot-toot, it's a
Chester. Sale. I'm calling it Chester, Chad and Hester.
Chester! I give Dan major props. Even if he isn't the only one who came up with that, I heard it from him first.
And folks, I did come up with it on my own, even if it does exist elsewhere.
Chester all the way.
So Chad is in this graveyard doing unsavory activities with dead bodies.
I love this so much.
Hester agrees that, you know, it's good to love dead bodies.
She just appeared from the fog. Like, how did she find him?
She was following him, my God. Obviously. And he doesn't even know her name, but she's just like, I like dead bodies, and you can do it in the back door.
She
and...
waits until he unzips his pants to reveal herself, and then toys with it. Oh, guys, I love this scene.
Yeah.
I am so fucked up. If we're already explicit, yes. I'm going full explicit here.
The fact that it's Lea and Michelle makes it all the more, like, what the heck is happening here?
So good.
So weird. Because it's like, she has glimmers in line deliveries where I'm like, this is Rachel Berry again.
Mm-hmm.
But then she's also saying the things she's saying. And it's horrifying. And amazing. And I definitely ship them as well. I really enjoyed the sort of... It's funny, because it's, like, sort of a satire of our generation, but also sort of just a satire of people making fun of our generation.
Ugh.
When they talk about, like, our generation has it too easy, no diseases, no great wars, and, like acting like that's a bad thing.
Yeah. like, that's so great.
Yeah.
Like, that shouldn't be a bad thing.
Yeah.
But... oh no, now we're all weaklings, so now we're left masturbating to dead bodies.
That's all we have left, guys.
That's the only way.
Only thing we can do that makes us feel.
Yeah. Oh, God. I drew my manic laugh because that's the only way to describe their interactions, yeah. Chester's interactions, as yeah. Manic. Oh, God.
You totally can read this, especially he says the line, like, the only thing makes me feel is the idea of chopping up bodies. You could read this as a hint that he's the killer, but
no,
I don't at all.
No, yeah. It's not good if he's the killer, because yeah. It's just so great that someone this
well, which
messed
also
up.
Brings me into the next part of their interactions, which is at the haunted house, which they actually, in my opinion, had character development this episode.
Yeah, I mean, we said that at the top, where we were like, there's great character development. No. Plot, a lot of it.
Yeah. No, because they actually... So the fact that they got to this haunted house... First of all, the whole build-up to them finding all the bodies was really, like, just, like... I liked how confused... like, how it was moving around so much, mm-hmm. that confused you were with Chad, where you were like, where the heck is Hester? Is he gonna get killed?
It was another kind of classic horror thing, where it's, like, person in a house flashlight not showing everything.
And two people love to have dark, unsavory, kinky sex.
And something bad is about to happen.
But they didn't go the full way and actually kill them, which I really thought, like, one of them's gonna die.
I'm glad they didn't. Not just because I'd missed the characters, but because they've already done the classic horror thing of the way that they killed Mandy.
Yeah.
So,
first of all, I want to give myself props here as far as last week I said we're going to have a scene where all the dead bodies are together.
Mm-hmm.
came very quickly.
I didn't think it would be this episode, being perfectly honest with you.
Yeah, I thought this was great. I thought the whole going from person to person and the reveal that we now are definitively all these people are definitely dead, and all the characters know that as well, so we don't have to hear them be like, Mrs. Bean, blah, blah, blah.
Where is she? Yeah, we've had that for 3 episodes now because she disappeared in episode 2.
Yeah.
3.
Bunch of horrific, gross moments.
Ugh.
You were very upset about the finger and the
leg. Like pus.
Also, I believe so. Mandy's like hanging from like her intestines or whatever. I believe.
Oh, I thought that was a her intestines
sure.
makes more sense.
Yeah.
They're fragile. Like they're not gonna hold you up. She was not a thin woman. And dropping. Oh, I don't want to keep thinking about this. Honestly, I'm not squeamish, but like
upsetting.
Yes. I think it just, my stomach was already turned from Mrs.
But
Bean.
I love that they switch from this gear, Chad and Hester, switch from, like, oh, like, we're into darkness, and, like, we want to have sex with dead bodies, to seeing dead bodies and freaking the hell out and just being, like, totally wrecked at this coffee shop, and Chad, like, actually doing the right thing and being like, nobody go here.
Yeah. Like, again, Chad shows some, like, smart, like,
and like,
I wouldn't call it, I don't know, is that street smarts? In a way, it's like logical thinking.
Yeah.
He does some logical thinking.
I would also
thinking.
Say like a certain level of like actually caring about people. Like,
right. I mean,
like,
I don't think he thinks he cares about people.
Yeah.
And sometimes he genuinely cares about people.
I
surprise, surprise. Character
like,
development. That's what you were saying.
No, yeah, I think Chad in a lot of ways, like I'm not saying that I think he's a good person, but I think that he's one of the more rounded characters here. Especially, like, he legitimately cared about Boone. He legitimately, like, would let Boone sleep in his bed with him and stuff like that.
Because he wanted him.
Yeah, like, I think that there is a lot of... I think Chad is, like, one of the better characters they have here. Hester, paired with him, is really funny. And I do like how they sort of, like... I'm interested to see how this goes forward. Like, if he's still into dead bodies, if they're still having a thing, or if they're too freaked out now. Like, I'm interested to see what comes next.
How great would it be if Hester is the one who gets Chad to, like, give up all other women? Like,
oh,
I will never... Like, if she makes an honest man, so to speak. Like, oh, God. I'm so in love.
We haven't talked in a while about who do you think is going to make it to season 2.
I don't know if I want to talk about that.
Yeah.
That makes me sad.
All I'm going to say is I want Chad to make it to season 2.
Me too. Why is it so unlikely?
This next season's all at a golf, haunted golf course.
Oh my God. He's a golf pro.
I don't need Hester. I mean, I like Hester, but
I just don't think Lea Michele is gonna want to do a second season of this. But
especially because I feel like the reason she's doing it is because it's something so different, and if she had to do another season, it wouldn't be the freshness would wear out.
Yeah, if she goes on to American Horror Story after this, I would not be surprised, at least as a guest part. I would really like that.
I would like to see her there because this, in a lot of ways, actually isn't. It's funny to say this, but it's not that different than the character she played before as far as it's very theatrical, comedic, you know.
The buggy eye. She does the buggy eye enthusiasm thing a lot.
It's just like a different side of the character, like a more darker, crazier version.
It's the twisted
side,
yeah.
Next plot point that I have here is the Chanel's take on the patriarchy. And so it starts off, you have this big cafeteria scene. It starts off with them trying to get people not to go to Zayday's haunted house.
I really like the lines where they had
earmuffs
and Abigail Breslin, and did Hester say, I can't remember.
Yeah, Hester did say something.
Yeah, where they were saying like why they joined the sorority, and they say very like the subtext to the, as opposed to the text of like, I don't know how to define myself as a person. It's like, people find me off-putting and this is the only way in which I can be acceptable.
Yes.
It's like,
and so Hester's thing was whatever Chanel said. The only reason, Chanel joined.
That was so unexpected.
Yeah.
Like, it was maybe a little too breaking. Like, I mean, I guess they set that up in terms of the Kappas with Chanel's opening scene of, like, breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah.
But that definitely began, like, that set the tone for the scene being out of character.
Yeah.
And it was enjoyable
for
me. But it definitely made me more confused about what is going on in this. It made the show seem crazier.
Yeah, this scene is a good scene in that it's enjoyable to watch. At the same time, there's a lot of crazy things going on here that I haven't fully decided how I feel about them, honestly. Because you have all these things that it really is about, like, so they're realizing that they're shallow, basically, and they define themselves based on surface things, and then we get into the next, you know, sort of feminism message of they're eating these cotton balls, it's over the top, and Chanel sort of coming out of what happened last week, where she was so puppy dog to Chad and realizing, like, guys can be as fat as they want, like, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
And so in some ways, it is character development, but... You didn't think about that?
I didn't think about that. Yeah. I didn't think of it in relation to Chad. And honestly, I like that more, because one of the big things we were saying was, like, she's been so strong.
Yeah.
Why is she letting her relationship to men define her so much?
Mm.
And if you're going to have this, like, boss-ass bitch character, for better or worse, that's kind of who she is. If you're going to have her that way, then, like, she should be that way.
Yeah.
At least realizing that she is, like, she does let men do it. Like, you know, having some self-awareness. But I have a bad feeling that because she's going to see Hester as backstabbing and cheating, like, Chad taking her more as cheating, and then she'll find out about the other Chanels.
Yeah.
I feel like she'll go back, and it's just, like, that's why this this scene is out of character, because it, like, sets it up.
Actually, I don't know that I would say that it's out of character. So I definitely see the positives here as far as that she's it is seeming like some sort of character development and her coming out of her own and becoming a stronger woman and not caring how when to find her. And I think that's all good. It's just there's something about leading into, we're getting into more detail too with the whole catcalling scene and them, you know, the whole fight there. And then also they have sort of them reclaiming the word bitch because one of the guys call Hester a bitch and she goes, she's not a bitch, I'm the bitch.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, all of this is, like, on a surface level, positive messaging. And I'm not even saying that isn't good. I think there are good things here.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I'm a little wary as far as these characters are not likable people, and everything they say you're usually supposed to see as ridiculous and not agree with.
Mm-hmm.
And so it feels weird to be having this come from them. I mean, through the same people doing Chanel-oween and, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, what you're saying is so far they have been untrustworthy sources of...
Yeah.
Not, like, of vitriol, you know, like, it's been mostly vitriolic, like, it's been negative, it's been stuff that we're supposed to be like, look at how wrong they are about things. But if you can have, like, Chad be, like, accepting of, I don't know, it's like they're trying to balance how hateful they are, at least that's what they were trying to do, like, look at everything that's problematic about them. But they can do this, like, they can have this good message of, like, being sisters and meaning, like, being a woman. But that said, like, in episode 2, they were drawing on the pledges and being, like, this is what's wrong with your body, this is that. And, yeah, I guess they're just, now that in this episode, they're like, screw it, your body can be what your body is. But if they go back on this, like, that's the thing, I don't trust the consistency.
Yeah, well, not only that, like, okay, so I think that I do like it more now than when I first watched the episode. Because I do think when I first watched the episode, I was like, where is this going?
Mm-hmm.
Is this a joke? Like, are they making fun of feminism? I did like that they outright called out, like, I took a gender studies class because it was
a requirement
or whatever.
I did learn something.
There was also an aspect of this that I'm not sure how much I like as far as how, like, it was straight, like, these aren't the characters speaking, this is a PSA.
Yeah, after-school special.
Yeah, at the same time, it's a very different thing with the crazy fight, slow-motion battle at the end. But, like, I didn't...
Well, battle might be...
Destruction.
Destruction is a better term.
I mean, I did think that it was that big fight scene was a really fun scene to watch, and it was really... I liked the, you know, the choreography of the fighting and the slow-mo and all that stuff. And that was a cool little thing to watch them all band together and beat them up at the same time. I don't know.
Like, yeah, I'm having trouble with it. Like, I wanted to enjoy it, but I just don't know how I'm supposed to feel about it, and I don't think I'll know how I feel about it until I see
how maybe they go even forward.
The full season. Yeah. Maybe not the full season, but like I'll see how much these realizations of these characters stick with them.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I need them to be like sisterhood forever, women forever, let's go burn our bras now. Like, I don't need that from them, but they can't go back to how they, if they go back to like episodes 1 and 2 in terms of how they address each other or just like what it means to be feminist.
Yeah.
Then I won't feel as good. Yeah. I'll see this as even more of a non sequitur. Yeah.
I want to continue this discussion by, I'm going to read this comment that was posted on the IGN review of Scream Queens that I thought was interesting, and I kind of agree with it, kind of don't, so I think it's a good opening discussion point. It's from blueeyes_AF. They say, feminism, where an acceptable reaction to being objectified is physically assaulting someone. I mean, yeah, catcalling is gross and douchey, but someone being an ass doesn't justify giving them testicular torsion. The scene seemed like it was supposed to be empowering, which makes it particularly troubling. So,
let's start with what we disagree about with this, maybe.
I mean, so I guess my feeling is I can understand that reaction. I think it's an understandable reaction. And I don't think you're supposed to, like, see this scene and see it as, like, here's your guide of what to do, kids. Like, it's supposed to be cathartic. It's supposed to be, like, the fantasy of, like, what you wish, what all women wish they could be doing to these douchey people who don't leave them alone.
Yeah.
And teaming up together in womanhood to destroy this patriarchy. And
destroy the patriarchy. Yeah.
And it obviously is not supposed to be taken as reality just by the way it's shot. And I mean, I almost for a second thought they were... I don't know why I thought this, because the show is already so heightened or whatever, but I thought for a second it was going to cut back to none of that actually happened and it was just in their heads. And, But, I mean, this show is crazy, so...
the show is crazy. Yeah, I'm actually glad that they didn't do that.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to... Again, I keep bringing up trust, but I want to be able to trust the show.
Yeah, what's happening.
Yeah. So I don't trust that this kind of thing will stick in terms of like what they're saying in their public service way, but I want to be able to trust what I'm saying, that what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that they didn't like go into Chanel's head and be like, oh, if only I could do that, but he's like a brother of some frat. Speaking of which, now we know that there are other Greek organizations than just Kappa and the Dicky Dollars.
I wish you could stop seeing Olga's face in that, guys.
I made like I knew you were about to say that. I made this weird like half grimace. So I guess what I disagree with this guy is like, no one's saying don't go beating up, like,
yes, there are consequences you know, in the real world.
don't go beating up misogynists because you'll get arrested. Even if you're a girl.
So, okay, there's another side to this too, which is, even if that's not what they're saying, is it negative messaging to the outside world if this show is, in a way, could be come off as, like, this is what feminists are. They hate men and want to beat them.
So many already say that. It's kind of annoying.
Well, that's the thing, is that's a stereotype, and could this be feeding into that? Generally, honestly, overall, I think this is positive. I think that you can read it other ways, and I understand where this person's coming from. But overall, I get positive from it. I mean,
I didn't read it as positively at first. Yeah. It kind of was like, they could have wrapped it up where, like, they do the full PSA.
Yeah.
And then they put him in his place. And the other guy who's backing him up, which is another great point. Another great element that just says rando with the emptiest tray ever. All he had was like an empty cup and a cookie.
Earmuffs like catches it. I almost felt like it was supposed to be like Spider-Man or something. You remember like Spider-Man like slow motion catches like a tray and kicks everything on it?
Oh, yeah. So I kind of wish that they did this thing where they like put him in their place. And then, like, they got that same applause, and then they turned around on their heels, like, flipped their hair, like, real girly girls, and then arms linked, like, strutted off. Like, I think I would have enjoyed that more.
See, the thing is, I agree as far as, like, if this was not this show. Like,
yeah.
I mean, like, that the whole point of this show is to go the crazy route, and it's not really supposed, like, the PSA part, to me, felt more out of place than the beating up place.
Yeah, this episode, you brought it up, but, like, one of your complaints about the show, or this episode, I should say, is that it really feels like there are no consequences to things. Yeah.
It's actually a great transition into what we're about to go to, but
yeah. So this definitely went along with that. And I don't know how I feel about it. Again, we'll see.
Maybe we'll return to this next week. Maybe we'll have some more feedback from people.
Yeah. So send us your feedback, what you think about it.
I do know that Mo Fierce enjoyed it.
Yeah. I'm not saying I disliked it. Yeah. The more I sit with it, the more I like it. But my gut reaction was like, I don't know.
Yeah. I did not, even though I think my general overall reaction is positive, it was not like a hit out of the park.
Right.
Like some of the stuff last week.
I enjoyed the visuals. Yeah. I'll leave it at that. Yeah. Now moving on.
All right. So another thing of there not being consequences in this world just being a little bit too crazy for me is we're going to talk about the dean and the police and that, like, yes, at some point you have to sort of, in a lot of ways this was reminding me a lot of American Horror Story, where the first season it's like, why are they still in this house? No matter, like, just get out of there. I don't care if you can't sell it, like, just, like, burn it to the ground and run away.
Yeah.
Like, just be hobos. And, like, so in some ways, like, they have to bend over backwards to make you believe that this school is going to stay open despite all these things happening.
Not just the school, but, like, the freaking house.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the fact that they're, like, the fact that Gigi's immediately not like, that's it, I'm shutting this out. Like, she has the authority. Isn't she, like, president? Like,
I forget. She's, like, a liaison or something.
No, I thought she was, like, president of national or something.
I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay, well, still, I think she has the authority to be, like, you're suspended.
Yeah.
I almost got murdered here. Yeah, like, yeah.
No, I agree. And so it's like, at some point, yes, you have to suspend your disbelief, but they're just, like, not making it easy. They're bringing up real things and just making them ridiculous. Like, the whole thing where D-Monk goes through, like, this person's not a student, this person's not a student. Well, Miss Bean worked in this house, and, like, there were two students that got killed, and another one who got dismembered, and deaf Taylor Swift. And so you can't just be, like, thrown off smart remarks and make me buy into this reality.
Yeah.
And, like, yes, the cop, like, apparently is friends with Dean Munch or whatever, but
I mean, I get how, I think I brought this up in the past on this podcast as well, but, like, without police incompetence, there's almost no crisis.
Yeah.
Like, there's just, because if the police were competent, then there would be protective services on, like, everybody and, like, an actual presence and, like, things like that.
Yeah.
But, and therefore, we'd have difficulty of drama without,
yeah.
I mean, on Scream TV series, like, cops got murdered constantly. Yeah. And, like,
at the same time, I actually think the Scream TV show did it better in that, like, so they had a good cop come in and actually ask good questions, and yes, they had her leave, and that was dumb, but she did come in and actually be smart and go after the right people. And then, like, in, like, near the finale, when they have things where, or they're saying, like, why are you having this Halloween dance, and he's like, no masks, and if there were a bunch of other parties around, then it would be harder to police all these parties. Like, they found ways to make it somewhat believable, and even though, like, at the end of the day, like, the FBI should have been there, and, like, there should have been, like, detail, like, four details on every kid. Like, so, like, you can always go to that place of, like, this is still unrealistic, but they said enough reasoning, they had enough real-world things going on that I was able to suspend my disbelief. This show, I am distracted by they're making it less and less real, and I know that it is supposed to be a surrealist show, but it, like, if there's no base in reality, then it's just, like, anything can happen, and I don't know what to buy into, and it just...
Yeah.
It's hard for me to even put my finger on or, like, convey why this is such a problem, but this is a really big... This is, like, the worst part of the episode to me.
I mean, they just... Okay, they have one detective on the case. First of all, are there ever single detectives on cases? Like, don't all the... I mean, I...
There were other cops.
There were cops, but they were uniforms. Like, they weren't... There was one detective on it. Yeah. I don't know. Aren't shows supposed to have, like, partner detectives? Yeah. I don't know how real cops work. Yeah. But this is not the place to have... Maybe they don't want the buddy cop thing. It would be harder to have the relationship with Dean Munch and the cover-up. or have two incompetent detectives. I don't know. But it just didn't sit right with me. Like, yeah. I just didn't enjoy it. It made me not...
You know what the other thing that Scream did that this isn't doing is stuff like the killer setting up other people as the potential suspects so that they're like, oh, we think we're okay this week because we have this guy in jail. Or like, oh, the killer hasn't killed for a few days. Maybe things have calmed down and they ran away. You know, like,
yeah.
Whereas this show is like, he's just killing so many people. What are we at, like 7 now? I don't even know. Like, and...
Not a small amount. There's not... A small amount of massacre. Like, in that first scene, that's not, like, the opening, but in the first scene post-Red Devil attacks GG/Kappa House,
yeah,
we have the detective and police there. Yeah. And yes, we established that Dean Munch and the detective are friends.
Mm-hmm.
But then Denise comes in talking about the kid who got his arms sawed off, and then the call comes into the detective.
Yeah.
We're assuming that the kid, what was his name, Caulfield, we think?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's probably still alive because Chad wasn't, like, bringing up, oh, I lost another brother.
Yeah, they multiple times said the kid whose arms got cut off.
Yeah, not like the kid who died from having his arms cut off. So I'm presuming we're going to see him again in some way because, yeah. It's just, they had that, and then in the end, when the dean is being stupid and is like, well, we have no evidence that this relates, it's like... Well, let's go through it. Miss Bean worked for the sorority that's being targeted. Shondell, that was the name of the friend that you heard Denise... At least the detective should have picked it up.
At minimum, she worked for the company that's supposed to be protecting this fraternity.
Exactly.
This sorority.
But, like, that detective should have had it in his notes that Denise said that she had a dead coworker friend in her car that was parked in front of Kappa House. Yeah. Coney is the new mascot. Well, who's going around killing people? The old mascot. Who is the other one? The kid got dismembered.
Yeah, Chanel too.
Chanel number two.
Yeah.
She was there. And yeah, Jane Doe.
Yeah.
Okay, I can see how Jane Doe is like, or, you know, a thing. But like, isn't it the job of the police to be like, there's a pattern here? Yeah. Like, it's just
I know that the whole idea you're supposed to say is that like, Dean Munch knows she's being ridiculous and is just trying to, like, play it off normal or whatever. She knows that there is a case here or whatever.
Of course she does.
But, like, what is the police's...
Why are the police letting her get away? Like, it's just...
I'm trying to put my finger on this because, like, obviously you're supposed to know it's ludicrous. Like, but that doesn't change the fact that it just leaves so many open questions and it just makes the world... hard to buy into and hard to care about. It's hard to care about when nothing is based in reality and nothing makes any sense, you know? And so...
It's just... Yeah, I don't want there to be no consequences. I don't want the only consequences in the show to be death by Red Devil. Like, I want there to be real life. Like, someone's gonna get fired. Someone's gonna get replaced. Like, and I don't just want to see that in the finale.
Yeah.
That would be annoying.
Let's also just talk about the Dean as a general character. I think that for both of us, this is... It's hard to say, because they made her more of an outright villain this week than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I found her... Aside from... I didn't mind her in the flashback.
I was just about to say that. I liked how they set her up in the flashback.
Because she was, like, a mastermind, and she was, like, a villain and, like, a badass. And so I enjoyed watching her in the flashback. But when she's continuing to hit on Wes, I just don't care. And it's not, and it's lame, and it's the same joke over and over, and nobody's calling it out. And
I mean, arguably they're building on it, because she's now doing it in front of other people.
Yeah, but blatantly. It's still...
But it's just the kind of thing where, like, yo, you did this in front of two other people. Yeah, maybe the detective won't back you up. I mean, won't back him up, they'll back you up. But, like, charging her with sexual harassment?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Again, no consequences. Yeah. And I want her to lose her job before the finale.
Yeah.
Let me put it that way. Yeah. And then potentially join the team that tries to find the red... Yeah. Like, I don't know how they're going to play this out, but I just don't... I just don't enjoy this anymore. Like, it was kind of funny last week where it was like, oh, she's being, like...
Yeah. Well, from a personal level, like, I personally... Never, like, as soon as it happened, the first time she hit on Wes, I was like, I don't need this.
Mm-hmm.
And also, what happened to her and Chad? Like, I want to see more of that. And like, so when they the first time I didn't like it, and now they like tripled down on this, and this is like a huge piece of her character. Every time it comes up, I'm like, why? Like, I don't need this.
I mean, they focus so much, including in the flashback, on how she's ambitious.
Yeah.
And cutthroat in terms of that, and I can respect that in a way of like, oh, she'll do whatever it takes to get what she wants. But now, and one of the things it took was her like sacrificing her personal life.
Yeah.
But for her, it's just like, well, I'd also say it's consistent with her character, but I just don't find it interesting anymore. I don't think they're adding enough to it, and I'm surprised that Wes is just taking it at this point. Like, I want him to, like, he accuses her of being the murderer. Yeah, she reasons out logically and correctly why she's not the murderer. I like that. I like that he's just being unreasonable. But then I just hope they don't.
So you learn a lot in screenwriting about tactics, and that when two characters have conflict and one wants something from the other one, they have to use a variety of tactics and go at it from different ways. Because if it's just like, so like, if I want a pen from you and I just go, give me the pen, give me the pen, give me the pen, over and over again, that's not fun to watch. I have to be like, give me the pen, or like, I'll give you 10 bucks of the pen, or please give me the pen, or I'll kill you if you don't give me the pen. Like, it has to escalate, it has to change. I feel like, yes, okay, maybe last week she changed it up and like talk to Gigi, sort of, but it just feels like her just repeatedly, desperately making ridiculous attempts, and he spurned her advance the first time, and she hasn't really done anything different since then. And like, it'd be one thing if she more like underhandedly like was there for him in a hard moment, or like hurt Gigi on the side, some side way or something, you know, like.
Well, here's the thing, like, he's clearly, like, he accused you of being the murderer, like,
yeah, he does,
he
not
clearly
want
doesn't like her or want her, and then he just takes it when she like puts her thigh between his legs and then says like, you're gonna be my sheep and I'll be the little Bo Peep, like, that was just, I mean, it was supposed to be gross, but I was like, Wes, don't just take it, like, I don't know. I think we're not supposed to enjoy watching this, weirdly enough.
Shall we move to the hag on Shady Lane?
We should.
Do you like that it's Shady Lane? Shady place?
Yes, I got it. Thank you, obvious writing. Haunted house on Shady Lane.
Yes.
Who would have thought?
So, I enjoyed... So, starting at the beginning of this whole plot line, it comes from this really funny back and forth that I enjoyed between Pete and Denise, where they both have done research at different libraries.
On the same night.
Yeah.
Oh, so cute.
Really funny. Enjoyed their interactions. Just good to see them. They both haven't been really interacting before. And I enjoy that.
I love it when they do this. When they make it feel genuine when characters connect and
also
have reasons to talk to each other.
They did like a combined comical, crazy version of like what Noah would do on Scream, where you're telling this backstory of his haunted story.
Or any know-it-all, for that matter.
Yeah.
Know-it-all. Know-it-all. Maybe that's why they named him Noah. Mind blown. Hashtag mind blown.
So, yeah. So I do want to talk about this. I did think this was really funny. At the same time, it felt sort of random that they both looked up this research about this thing on that night. Out of nowhere, like, I don't really know why they, like, who introduced this idea to them, why would they think that this urban legend connected with everything, until, like, eventually, yes, they figured out it was 95, and that is a connection, but before you know that connection, why would you think this house that's not even on campus, like,
and the milk, and the,
it seems
it's just, like,
strange.
A weird conclusion for them both to jump to. I feel like they could have built that up a little bit more. Like,
it kind of reminded
then
me...
Then we remembered that...
Yeah, it kind of reminded me how I thought there was some sort of a little bit of awkward, just hammering exposition in last week, where Grace and Zayday just walked into Ariana Grande's room seemingly randomly and then saw the blood.
Yeah.
And
then we're like, is that blood?
Yeah.
It was a little clunky.
I want to talk about Denise's backstory here, her further interaction with Zayday.
Loved it.
Yeah. I thought it was really fun. It's a cool backstory for her. Zayday got her sort of badass moment back there. It does make Denise maybe a little less in a way, less likable because she's pointing fingers for this, like, selfish reason in a way, but...
Yeah. But I still do think that Zayde is hiding something.
Okay, her facial reactions throughout this episode are, like, there's something going on.
Dun, dun, dun.
I mean, and obviously the fact that she got kidnapped as opposed to killed, something's going down here.
Right.
I don't know. I don't think she's the killer, but, like... I think something's going down.
Oh, yeah. When she gets kidnapped, once again, we have an incompetent cop, the 911 operator.
Mm. Yeah. Just,
I mean, I get it in part, but it went on a little too long for my, like, the back and forth. Yeah. Sorry.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I do, this is sort of the second week in a row where a character who was attacked very clearly implicates another character, but I don't know that it's, like, supposed to. So as far as, like, so, like, last week, the Dean clearly did not want Gigi in the way of the West thing, and then Gigi's attack, and this week, Zayde is in the way of Chanel getting the presidency again and gets attacked. So I don't know if, like, there's something going on here with the, I mean, it's two different people, but...
Interesting.
I think that as far as the writing goes, they're trying to sort of make you, like... think for a second there.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm fascinated by that now. Mm-hmm. You can even apply that with, like, arguably Boone and Chad and Caulfield, like...
Oh, yeah, because the whole thing was Boone, so Chanel came and saw Boone with Chad, and then Boone got attacked, but Boone, obviously, Boone isn't really, like, dead, so I don't know.
It's an interesting thing that they might be playing with.
Yeah.
We should keep an eye on that.
Well, I mean, all I'm saying is that, like, before we found out Boone wasn't dead, that is definitely what the implication was supposed to be, that, oh, Boone's getting attacked right after that thing with Chanel, and so...
I was actually thinking about the scene where it was the Backstreet Boys scene, where Caulfield gets in the way of... Chad almost being killed by the Red Devil.
Yeah.
And then it could argue, like, that might develop as, like, maybe how Caulfield got in the way of Boone and Chad. And I don't know. I'm not saying that was Boone. But I don't know. I just want to keep... That's an interesting thing you brought up. And I want to keep an eye on that in future episodes to see if that is a continuing factor.
Oh, also, Mandy dying... seems like it's protecting Dean Munch, because Dean Munch wouldn't want Mandy talking.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of different things here. It's also interesting to, like, very much, getting back to when we were talking about Grace not really being the average protagonist, these deaths are not all about Grace in the way that, like, the deaths on screen were all about Emma. And so, like, it's not even like on screen where you're like, oh, why doesn't Emma have a detail of cops with her at all times? Grace doesn't necessarily even need one, because it's not even really about Grace. It doesn't seem like the kills are about Grace in any way. And the only reason Grace is really involved is because this is happening close to her, and she's a good person and is an investigative person.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I knew that, but,
it's hard to, like...
It's so, like...
Yeah, it's such in my the trope mind, that
she's
you assume.
Such a, like, the final girl.
Yeah.
That the fact is that they really haven't... The killer isn't going after her.
Yeah,
like, she is not the intended harassment target. It's just Kappa.
Well, the thing is, you assume Final Girl here, especially in the pilot, because she sees the Red Devil, which is a very classic thing, that only the Final Girl has the power of sight, because sight is a masculine trait, and the Final Girl is the only one with masculine traits, and girls can hear things, they can't see things. It's a whole thing. Yeah.
Ooh. Is that the whole, like... Like, girls hearing that, like, is that supposed to be a thing of undermining, like, mentally as well? Like, mentally unstable, it's, like, she's hearing things, or, like...
No, I think it's more that, like, women, like, listen, they're good listeners, and they, like, they talk to each other, and they're understanding, and men, also the whole idea of, like, women, like, think nice things being said, as opposed to guys just want to look at the body and don't really care about talking. And,
okay.
Yeah.
The inherent idea that men are more visual than
women. That's
women.
Actually a thing that goes beyond just horror movies. That goes through a lot of gender norms and a lot of shows and stuff. Yeah, it's a whole big thing.
Being Dan's girlfriend has a lot of benefits. Now I'm all, like, rage against society, as if I wasn't before. I am not a college student who has taken women and gender studies classes. Oops. They're not a requirement here.
Also, I just realized that someone's only listened to Scream episodes, this is the first time we've actually said that you're my girlfriend.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're dating and yes. stuff. Yeah, we're cute.
Mm-hmm. let's talk about the actual hag thing.
Well, going back to it, okay. I thought I just really liked the fact that Denise still hasn't let go of Zayday as a potential killer.
Even and after
then,
all that.
Even after everything. And then she, like... You wrote how much you love it about the super speed her running around the corner.
Denise just like appearing around the corner. Really
loved it. It was just a nice moment.
So aside from just the fact that Gigi specifically is the hag,
dun dun dun.
I did like the whole thing with there are bookmen in 1995. I thought that was really funny.
That was such a great probably not.
So the idea here is that the hag. Was taking care of a baby, got them lots of toys, and then maybe the baby disappeared or got taken from her, and she continued to go
Or she
crazy.
Gave it up, and then went...
Well, no, but she was wailing. Right. She was and wailing. So also, Mandy said that one person died, one person was in Fox News, and one person was institutionalized. I think Mandy was... Gigi, after all this happened, was institutionalized.
Right.
And so we also accept that, maybe she's not included in those three, because I don't think that she is... one of the people that we've seen in the flashbacks yet. Someone somewhere said that you can see Gigi in the crowds in those scenes. I haven't gone back and looked. I don't know if this is a real.
Well, I mean, the thing is that there was a pledge that did stay with the baby.
Yeah.
And they're only looking at the girls who were graduates of that year.
Mm.
And she was a pledge with the baby because her friend was a pledge who had the baby. So they weren't already sisters. So we presume that they were younger. Yeah. Also, when we saw Dean Munch in the flashback, she was with the three sisters because girl stayed. It could have been a thing of even Miss Bean somehow, though she seems kind of crueler in the flashback. Yeah. Like, I'll make a sausage out of her and feed her to these girls. But like... maybe she had something to do with, like, here, run away, get away, or something like that. I am still voting that Gigi was that girl who was left with the baby.
Yeah.
And now that she's...
I personally am not voting that, but I think she's maybe there are roommates, and the girl's like, Dean Munch is going to go after me, take this baby, protect it, or something. Like, I don't know.
Okay.
I think something like that will happen. Or, I mean, you could be right. I just think that the actress doesn't look quite enough like Gigi for me to...
I think she does, but let me ask you this. Would you be disappointed if that pledge was Gigi?
No. Yeah, I'm now leaning towards that it probably isn't, but I could see that. I could certainly see that being a possibility.
I just don't see this as being one of the red... I wouldn't be disappointed if I'm wrong, but I just don't see this as being one of the red herrings.
Mm.
That they establish, because I'm having trouble accepting or like thinking of an acceptable alternative. None of those things kind of
that doesn't
sense
make
to
it
me.
More convoluted and weird,
right?
And,
like, why would this happen?
Yeah,
we'll see. Either way, I'm fascinated by this.
I do kind of want to talk about who we think the baby is, but I'm gonna save that because I think some of these tweets we have might like. Spark conversations that will connect back to that.
Right.
So should we get into the
That's really... Oh, just gonna say, those dolls in the house on Shady Lane.
Scared you. Not a fan.
I don't like. I saw scenes of Chucky when I was a kid, and then someone gave me a doll with similar sized head that talked in a very, like, garbled language. It was actually a doll from a different country, so maybe that doll is even speaking another language, but it sounded vaguely... Anyway, don't like dolls. Don't like porcelain dolls. Don't like headless, bodiless dolls. Doesn't work for me.
I love headless dolls.
Oh, God. Next you're going to say that you... No, I'm not going there after revealing that...
Hashtag Chester.
Oh.
All right.
Hashtag Chester. Toot toot.
Alright, so if you want to contact us and you want to be part of the show, you can do so by either emailing us at thescreamcast@gmail.com, sending us a tweet at ScreamPod on Twitter, or you can also check out thescreamcast.wordpress.com. That has a place where you can connect with our Twitter there. It has a contact us link that you can just send us a contact us through there. It has all the episodes. It's a good time. Also, if you want to send us an iTunes review.
Or
like
post an iTunes review.
Yeah,
you don't even have to write a comment. Yeah. Just like, if you could rate us 5 stars, please. You know, that would help a lot.
Like the lovely people at Whoosh Danny H did, or Diana from Delaware 888 did. They both gave us 5-star reviews. That was so awesome of them. Thank you guys so much. And, you know, whenever somebody gives us a nice rating, we tweet it out and thank them. So if you want to make our day, that would be quite keen of you.
Yes, all right. Sir and or ma'am.
All right, so getting into the tweets of the week. Some of these, I guess, want to say that some came out before episode 4 aired. I don't think any of them really are contradicted by episode 4, but I just wanted to put in case somebody's theories have changed or whatever since there's some of these tweets. I'll read this first one from at Mo Fierce. They say, obviously Zayday's grandma is involved since she sent her the same custom red chainsaw. Rambo grandma.
Hashtag Rambo grandma. Man, we're doing a lot of hashtags. I try to use them ironically, but like...
You're just in love with hashtags. Yeah. So do we want to talk about the weirdness of that chainsaw being so similar? Do we think... I mean, obviously, yes, something is going on because she was kidnapped.
It's supposed to be a custom chainsaw.
I think we're going to find out next
week. I'm willing to like withhold judgment.
Yeah.
I'm just curious. It's one of those things where I'm just like, I want to let this happen. Yeah. I don't really care to put a theory together. I'm too lazy in this regard.
All right, you want to read the next
quality
one?
Quality podcasting. I admit that I'm too lazy to make a theory. All right, also from Mo Fierce, I read that Chanel No. 3's earmuffs are an homage to the actress's real-life mom, Carrie Fisher, a.k.a. Princess Leia, as I'm sure you know. I didn't know that.
I did not know that, but I do now.
She has a different last name.
I did know that Carrie Fisher was Princess Leia. I did not know that she was the mother of the actress who plays
Yeah, most. Despite our lack of classic horror movie, supernatural horror movie knowledge, we're not.
Idiots.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. We don't live under a rock.
Yes, I did know who Carrie Fisher was. So that's funny that she's Carrie Fisher's daughter. She's going to be in Star Wars 7. In some capacity, apparently.
I was weird thing to admit, but like as I was thinking about I saw that tweet earlier even before seeing this episode, and you know how shower thoughts are a thing, and I was like, man, isn't Hollywood nepotism, if she's not in Star Wars, I don't know if I'd be like disappointed or relieved. Like I thought of that in the shower, but
You're having a weird moment on this podcast.
Have safe sex, kids. Like, that's all I have to say. In the shower and out.
And think about dead bodies while you do it.
Right. I don't know if I support that.
So the person who reviewed us earlier, at Woosh Danny H, also said, for me, Chanel 5 is the killer. Based on how Chanel 1 became Chanel 1 by the original one dying, so the old person who got spray tanned to death. Or I don't think they were actually dead.
No, not to death. Yeah. But to scarification.
Doom. Yeah. So then the Chanels that have died are ahead of her, 4 and 2. 4 isn't actually dead, right? They just left because they had anxiety or something.
Yeah. I wonder if we're going to see her.
I have a feeling we won't. But
maybe that'll be Taisa Farmiga.
I would not be surprised at all if Chanel 5 was a killer, because Abigail Breslin has not given that much to do, and she's a big-name actress and is a very good actress.
And now she's being inconsistently written.
Yeah. I would not be surprised if she was involved. The thing that's interesting that we don't talk about enough, I don't think, is that no matter who we think the killer is, we have to have a connection between them and Boone. Which actually connects to the next tweet, if you want to read that.
Yeah, from at Latasha Renee writes, hey guys, I'm so glad you're covering Scream Queens on the podcast. I wasn't sure how I felt about it at first, but it's really growing on me. My theory is that Sam is one of the killers. She's a feminist, so I can see her trying to make a statement that a woman could be a killer, since a lot of people probably assume that it's a man. Wasn't she also in the film class with Wes? So that would support your idea that the killer got their chainsaw inspiration from there. Also, as her and Boone are the only two gay characters, it wouldn't be too surprising if they had some time of prior connection. Plus, now she has an alibuddy thanks to Chanel No. 3. I know it still needs some refining, but it's my current theory, as crazy it may seem.
So, I think that this is actually a pretty solid... I don't know that I necessarily agree with it, but it has enough backing up that makes some sense to me. She's also, I also wouldn't be surprised again if it's a more minor person like this, so that, you know, as silly, like, I don't want to be like, oh, all gay people know each other or whatever thing, but, like, they could have met at some, like, mixer for LGBTQ or something, like, I can totally, that is some reason, some sort of connection between those two characters, where I don't have any connection between Boone and anybody else.
I don't think Sam's a freshman.
No, Sam is a plague, so I think...
Yeah, well, I mean, you don't have to be.
Yeah, that's a good... I can't remember. Well,
whatever. In any case, I like the theory of the alibuddy, like Chanel number...
Earmuff.
Three. Earmuff.
Yeah.
Carrie Fisher's daughter. Yeah. I don't want to refer to her as that. Earmuffs. She came asking for the alibi, alibuddy, setting that up, but I would like how, oh, surprise, it actually pays off. So, but maybe Sam, it's an example of how maybe there can be killers, but not
the killer.
The killers, not the only people who are murdering people are the people in the Red Devil costumes.
Definitely. Currently, I think that Chanel number 5 to me is one of the more believable people. I can totally see that.
And she actually fought against Boone being allowed to pledge.
Yeah.
And I think that would be nifty of like, oh, he's gonna be a pledge, even now he's connected to Kappa as well, and then faking his death.
Yeah.
Also the fact that the morgue, and then after they place the dead bodies in the morgue, they keep disappearing. And if Boone has the connection in the morgue.
Yeah.
Because he was, you know, it works.
A lot of, there's interesting things. Most of the people, I'm actually pretty lost on who this killer can be, because most of the people I just don't think it could be. I don't think it can be Chanel. I don't think it can be Dean Munch. I don't think
it's Wes anymore.
I don't think it's Wes. I don't think it's Grace. And I don't think it's Pete.
I don't think it's Zayday. I don't think it's Denise.
Yeah. Who else is, like...
I don't think it's Gigi.
Yeah, I don't think it's Gigi either. So...
Well, the only ones who haven't been accused, in a way, are the Chanels.
Yeah, well, and Chanel number 1 has been...
Well, I mean, she's the Chanel, they're the other ones are the Chanel. Whatever. I don't think, because Earmuffs and Abigail Breslin, they're some of the few who haven't even been, considered, but...
Earl Grey hasn't been considered either.
That's true, actually. Yeah. But the thing is that now, since we have number 3 going and saying, I'm definitely not the killer, but I need someone to prove it, she's in a way brought up the idea of her being a killer. So that really only leaves number 5.
Well, also Hester.
Hester's way too turned on by...
Yeah.
Again, she might have killed someone.
Yeah.
No, she reacted really grossed out to the dead bodies.
I believe that.
I think it's just all, she has fetishized it. And
the other thing we haven't talked about is, unless there's 3 killers, Chad and Earl Grey can't be one of the killers, because they were both attacked by the 2 Red Devils.
Right.
When they were, so... There's a lot of crazy stuff going on. I don't know. If you guys have more theories, I'd love to hear them.
Yeah.
I'll end out here with our last tweet from @Macelanian_, who has been a follower since the early Scream days of MTV Scream, and is a follower of my Girl Meets World podcast. They just said, "Hey, Dan and Olga, personally, I like it when you guys go scene by scene, but if it's easy to go character by character... that's fine, too. Let us know what you thought of us going by plotline this week, and just if anybody else agrees scene by scene is better, figuring it out.
I have a feeling, they're going to do more things like this, the structure of this episode in the future, where now things are getting so intertwined. Pretty much every character has been introduced to every other character. Pete and Wes have been introduced now.
Oh, yeah, I thought that was funny, too.
Yeah, that was he's not going to like you, referring to Wes. Yeah. That was nice. That was another, oh, dad, kind of moment.
Yeah, because when I was trying to...
It might be harder to do character by character.
I was trying to go by character this week, and I was like, oh, well, Grace interacted with Pete, who interacted with Denise, who had to do with Gigi. It was just, all over the place. So I try to go by, plot line. I just don't, I feel like if you go through every scene, it's just going to be so long, and I'm trying to keep it to somewhat of a manageable length. I don't know how long we're going here this week.
We always think we're going to make it under an hour, and we never make it under an hour. Yeah. So Hope you like it.
Well,
it's what you get.
We have 5 stars on iTunes, so
hopefully that'll continue. Yes. Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge.
All right, guys. I think that's all I've got. Do you have anything else you want to
throw out? I have nothing else to say.
All right. Well, have a lovely day, and I hope you enjoyed this. And,
see you next Tuesday. You won't see us next Tuesday. Oh, God. Did I just do the thing where yes. Explicit tag.
Well, we didn't even actually, let's just quickly say that, but now Wes always says see you next Tuesday, and I don't know if they're purposely going for the cliche joke there or the vulgar joke there. If you don't know that joke,
Google it. We're not telling you.
See you next Tuesday.
No. What you were going to say was the fact that the show airs on a Tuesday.
Ah.
You forgot that.
See you next Tuesday.